take questions if there are any.
Yeah. Hello, Gautam. Could I ask a question? I'm Vandana.
Yes, Vandana.
I'm a doctor and I'm accountable for all my actions towards the patients. If I tell I'm a non-doer, as you know, all patients in any case are beating up doctors nowadays. How does non-doership apply to physicians who take active decisions?
Vandana, this is actually addressed in most of my videos. First of all, being a doctor was not in your control. Your conditioning, your genetics, and so on and so forth, your parents' views on education, lot of factors, your schooling, your college, what you were exposed to, as a result of which you became a doctor as per your destiny. That is the first step. And secondly, the knowledge and understanding that I am not the doer of my actions does not absolve you of your responsibility to society, because we are living in a society where we are accountable for our actions. So it does not mean that if we have the understanding we are not the doer, that we can do anything we like and not be accountable, because that is also the oath the doctors have taken to help the patients. So this understanding, please don't get it wrong that it becomes a license to do whatever one would like to do. There has to be accountability. But you see, the understanding is that even if you had a desire to be a doctor, there are many doctors who didn't end up being doctors who had that desire. They wanted to study and be doctors. It didn't happen. So it was your destiny to be a doctor. It was your destiny to help patients. And now whether or not patients improve under doctor's care, don't improve under doctor's care, is their destiny. So there's all this is addressed in the earlier books. And if you do have the time and inclination, please go through that, because it will answer this for you. I'll tell you something quite funny. I have a friend, he's now 79. He was very proficient in English literature from childhood, extremely proficient, passionate about it. And his mother forced him to sit for the IPS exams, the police service. And he told me, I tried my best to fail that exam because I had no interest in this, but I cleared it. And he became a high-ranking police officer. That is the hand of destiny. So obviously, he was accountable for his actions as a police officer. But he had the complete understanding that he had no wish to be a police officer, but the hand of destiny rolled the dice in such a way that he became a police officer. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, Gautam. Mantesh here.
Yes, Mantesh.
Yeah. When I was reading about reading book of Nisargadas Maharaj, there was talk about reincarnation, and there was a mention of, you know, how can a concept can reborn. So we need to understand that what is getting reborn is it's again another form where the consciousness plays its role. So if this is the case, then even Buddha said he had seen his incarnations. And recently I saw Punj Papaji's video also. There also he mentioned and he recalled his past reincarnation somewhere in Karnataka. So according to me, yes, even if I sit and see, I had so many reincarnations. But what is born is a thing, something, a body and a mind which got born, and in that self experienced it. And there is whatever I feel now, if I think now also, if it is a consciousness or awareness, then definitely this is going to reincarnate. But if I think from an individual identity with a limited mind and body, then this is not going to reincarnate. Can you please throw some light on this?
Mantesh, you have asked a question which actually deserves one full session.
Okay.
But I will just very briefly in 2 minutes explain two aspects of this. Okay.
Okay.
This question is being asked by an individual. In deep sleep, this question will not arise. And as Ramana Maharshi said, that deep sleep is when you get closest to the self, SCAPS. Okay. Now, the fact is that the ego itself, Mantesh, in this birth will end with this birth. Mantesh does not reincarnate as the individual called Mantesh. Therefore, all the Advaita teachings, especially the ones which have emerged in the last 100 years, they all say, let's deal with this life. Let's understand in this life what is self-realization and what is enlightenment. Now, the other aspect is that according to the Indian traditions, it is the sanskaras and the vasanas, the desires and tendencies which reincarnate. The unfulfilled desires and tendencies take another birth. So in that concept, the ego is defined as the ball of vasanas and sanskaras which takes rebirth. So these are two different concepts. But the fact is that in either of the concept, it is the end of the cycle of unfulfilled vasanas and sanskaras. It is the end of the cycle of doership. Both of them, when they get exhausted, then there is no rebirth. That is what they have in common. So, as it is said even in the Gita, the ego deluded thinks, I am the doer. So, in these teachings, what they are trying to point at is when you pull out the thorn of doership from the flesh, then automatically your vasanas and sanskaras start disengaging. So if we go on about this in this talk, we lose the whole talk, but I would love to explore this in another talk because it's quite interesting to see this from various angles and not just from one aspect which we feel is the truth. Either way, as Ramakrishna said, that if we wear the sandals, which are the knowledge that God alone exists, we will be out of this equation.
Okay, thank you, Gautam.
Hello, Gautam.
Hello.
Hi, Gautam. It's Ranju here. I got two questions, which is quite linked with each other. So what is the origin of thought? Is it ego? Is it conditioning from past or present lives? Or is it God? And what should one do if we try to disassociate from the thoughts? Knowing the thoughts have very high, the source, or, sorry, that's totally contradicting with the first question. Like, how to witness a thought? It becomes a process for me. It's become a struggle rather than an experience. I had a very heavy conditioning, which I'm quite aware of that. So I know where it stems from. Those thoughts are sometimes they are projected toward, projected or only thoughts form, projecting, hurting a loved one. And then ending up having the thoughts about having the feeling of guilt, and it becomes a very heavy struggle for me. So I don't know how to, I try to be witness to the thoughts, try to, but again, in a process, I get involved. So please help me.
Actually, what you have said is very natural. But you see, wherever there is struggle, there is doership. So that's a very good pointer for you. It is not about struggling, because it is the understanding which does the job. This is such a beautiful teaching that it does not need your help. It only needs your earnestness. You see? Now, do you know what the next thought is going to be? You don't. So let's say in very simple language that the next thought comes from outside. What happens is that the ego takes delivery of that thought and converts it into thinking. It stretches that thought in the duration of time and says, this happened to me. This person hurt me. I'm getting hurtful thoughts now. Whereas what is happening actually is thinking in the duration of time is happening. And that thinking is almost always associated with a sense of doership, either something the other has done or something I have done. Now, what to do about this thinking? Nothing to do about it, because that would add another layer of doership, but merely witnessing that this is happening. So one doesn't even have to try too hard to witness. It is natural. When you realize, let's say you sit in meditation for 5 minutes, not more than 5 minutes, okay? Thoughts are bound to arise. Now, some thoughts will arise and dissipate. And one thought may suddenly make you think, oh, I have to do this errand in the evening. Now, that thought has stretched into this errand you have to do in the evening, which is the thinking. And at some point, you realize, my God, I was involved in that. And that thinking gets cut off at that time. That was not you who cut off the involvement. That was the witness. You cannot cut off the involvement in the thinking, because you are the involvement in the thinking. You cannot cut off the involvement. Cutting off the involvement in thinking happens. And then one realizes, my God, there was involvement in that. That is the witness. So please do not try to witness thoughts. Please do not try to witness thinking. Let the understanding do its job. And one day when you sit for 5 minutes, you will realize that a thought arose, it was fine. Another thought arose and I started thinking about this movie I'm going to see on Netflix in the evening. And suddenly I realized, my God, there was involvement in that. That is the witnessing. Allow it, allow it, allow it. Nothing is to be rejected. This is not a method of concentration. This is not a method of focus. This is a method of just being, just be. Forget about becoming. Just forget about becoming. And when you rest in being more and more, which will happen, the thinking itself will start getting cut off faster and faster.
But the thing is that if there is a pattern of certain kind of thoughts, and there is a consistent pattern, now, how won't it attract? If I sometimes we say that when we attract the things we think about, as per law of attraction. So if I'm thinking negative, won't I attract the negativity? It is such a gruesome, torturous, strenuous.
Are you thinking negativity, or is negativity arising?
How do I know?
So You will know in the sense that if you are involved in that thinking.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Then you have your answer.
No, still I don't have the answer.
You might like an essay which I had written on patterns of the ego. It's okay. In my book, I think it's in The End of Separation.
Okay.
But I would only like to say that life is already hard. Life is difficult for most people. So don't make it more difficult on yourself. Because the earnestness to get peace of mind is there. Otherwise, you would not even be reflecting like you are reflecting on all that is happening. But please allow the teaching to do its job. What is happening is we want the outcome faster because we are suffering. So we think if we put in more effort, if we are more diligent, we will get the results faster. That is how we think as individuals. And in that process, we are creating more suffering for ourselves. So please allow and accept consciousness, which has brought you on this path to take you till the end. And that is why Rameshji would say, why consider your glass half empty? Why not consider it half full? If God has brought you onto the spiritual path because you haven't, it is your conditioning and background and upbringing which has brought you here and the experiences you faced in life which were not in your control. So if God has brought you so far in the journey of seeking, why think he will drop you here? Allow him to walk with you home.
כמה דברים אפשר לקנות היום בישראל?
Hi, hi Gautam, this is Murli.
Hello.
Hi Gautam, this is Murli.
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, so in your concept, basically, where does law of karma stand? Or in, you know, Ramesh Balsekar's concept, where does law of karma stand?
Mudli, as I had said earlier in this talk, as Ramana Maharshi himself said, that whatever happens, happens on account of one's prarabdh karma. And therefore, the best course is to keep silent.
Okay.
But what the clear distinction which Rameshji made was that karma's pure definition is action. What has happened is it had, by the individual, it has got converted into my action, something I am doing. Mm-hmm. And when the sting of doership is removed, then the karma reverts to pure action. So therefore, he would keep referencing the Gita and saying that it is the sense of doership which is the thorn. It is not the karma which is the problem. It is the, you see, there's this story which I really like in the Gita, where at the end of the battle, Arjuna told Krishna, I have a question for you. And he said that every time I shot an arrow at Karna's chariot and it moved 3-4 feet behind because of my power, you didn't really praise me or you didn't really, you know, encourage me. You just watched. And when Karna hit his arrow at my chariot, which moved behind just a foot at the most, you kept applauding and saying, what a great marksman, what a great marksman. And Krishna heard him out and said, I will answer you when you get off the chariot. And Arjuna said, no, firstly, I can't get off. You are my guru. I cannot get off before you. And I want to know this answer because I felt it was unfair. So Krishna said, okay, all right, I am your guru, so it's a command that you get off the chariot before me. And so Arjuna gets off before Krishna, and then Krishna steps down and the chariot falls apart. Mm-hmm. And so Krishna tells Arjuna that, my dear Arjuna, your chariot was finished right from the start when Karna shot the first arrow. It was me who was holding it together, but you thought that you were doing things. You see, this doership is the karma. If the sting of doership is removed, especially from relationships, which is what I talk about the most, mm-hmm. then the rinanubandhan, the bondage of the relationship, snaps. Mm-hmm. Then the relationship is no longer stuck in an action-reaction loop like a tennis match, which is what we normally do. I think we have some...
Some audio problem, I guess.
Audio problem. Zoom is apparently notorious now for these interruptions.
Okay.
So you see, what happens is we perpetuate this action-reaction loop by blaming and condemning and judging people. And if the thorn of doership is removed, that does not happen anymore. And so the rinna, the bandhan, the bondage of the relationship snaps.
Got it.
The action reverts to pure action in the moment, in the relationship, or in any event in our lives.
Okay. So basically, I have been, having this feeling that, some years back, I've done something wrong to somebody. And in the course of time, might be in the next 2-3 years or now or sometime later, the karma will catch up with me. For my wrongdoings. So how do I explain myself that, so as per the concept that you have explained, the action was not done by me, so I don't have to worry about, things. Is it the right understanding?
Yes, but that does not mean hurt will not arise. You may have a regret that something which hurt someone. That regret will arise, and that regret will want to make you, may want to apologize to that person. Look, I'm really sorry if my words hurt you, but please understand that I didn't mean to. You see, what happens is now you understand that your friend who got hurt or your relative who got hurt because it was meant to happen. And whatever you said was based on how you felt. Your conditioning at that time, your genetics, your blueprint, the chemical composition in your body, if someone said something in the morning which upset you. So there were many factors behind that action which happened to hurt someone else. Now with the light of understanding, you realize, my God, even if my intent is not to hurt, it sometimes happens. So you know it was not in your control. So what happens is, when the sense of doership is removed, you don't blame yourself and condemn yourself.
Right.
God, what did I do?
Right.
That understanding removes that misunderstanding.
Right.
But by all means, the hurt is a real human experience. And it will lead to an apology if it is meant to. Because that is what life is about.
Yeah.
So it just removes that misunderstanding that I did this, therefore I am guilty of this crime of hurting someone else. That kind of thinking starts changing. You become easier on yourself. Mm-hmm. And when you become easier on yourself, you become easier on others. So tomorrow, if someone says something which you don't like and which hurts you, you realize, I don't know, maybe this person had a bad day. A bad news in the office, has a health issue, something in his conditioning which kind of triggers this thing in him which has hurt me. So you start looking at people more objectively and more compassionately.
Right.
Now you understand that everyone is made the way God has made them.
Right.
Everyone is acting on their genetics, their DNA, their conditioning as God made. So what happens is, with this understanding, whatever arises, arises in the moment, but you don't drag that feeling through the mud like you used to do earlier. It is let go of much easier.
Thank you.
Namaste, Gautam. Many times said that you want to desire the truth more than your next breath or next sip of water. And in the same lineage of Advaita, there is a teaching to call off the search and get rid of that restlessness to get it. So how is this paradox explained?
Can you do anything to get rid of it?
No.
So then, and even that thirst, one cannot tell someone you have to want this more than your next breath. Is it happening naturally or not? So frankly, this is not my understanding. That thirst is not in your control, and there's nothing you can do to hasten the process, because that is the ego coming in through the back door. That is why I keep saying, allow, allow, allow the search to happen and the teaching to do its job. And let us not forget, in very simple words, what are we looking for is nothing but peace of mind. You know, I must have sat on the hot seat in front of my spiritual teacher only once in the beginning, that too because there were fewer people and they forced me to sit there when I had no idea what was going on. I was 29 at that time, and he asked me, what are you looking for? Are you looking for enlightenment? Or are you looking for self-realization? What are you looking for? And I was quite flummoxed because I didn't even know what these words meant. Frankly, I even now don't know what they mean. And he said, all right, forget these big words. We can say that what you are looking for is what everyone is looking for, whether they know it or not. And that is peace of mind. And this is a mantra I lived by. This is what I found when I looked at the simplicity of the teachings of the greatest of masters, especially for me, whether it was Vivekananda, whether it was Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ramana Maharshi, it all came down to peace. It was nothing too esoteric. The approaches were all different. Maharaj would go into prior to consciousness and all that stuff. But when it came down to me and my life, the answer was simple. Am I at peace with myself and with others?
Namaste, Gautam.
Namaste.
I have come across a video of Gurunath Ji's video on veganism. Should one be a vegan or no? And he says that do not be a vegan, do not be at the extreme. It is impossible to be a vegan or hypocritical to be a vegan. So I just wanted to know why and your opinion on veganism. Because I have a guilt feeling associated whenever I take milk and milk products. I wanted an opinion. Yeah.
But why do you need my opinion? You must do exactly what you think and feel you should do.
So that way I will probably take it because I like to have it.
You must do exactly what you think and feel you should do. You don't need other people's opinions. I will tell you my own story. When I was much younger, I was what you would call a proper non-vegetarian. I would eat everything because I enjoyed it and my conditioning was that. And one day, finally, I don't know how it happened also, because there was no intent on my part to become vegetarian, I stopped eating red meat. I don't know how it happened. That happened, and a few years went by, and then I stopped eating. I used to have chicken, for example. Even that dropped on its own. There was no intent to drop it. It dropped. And one by one, I just found, as a natural process, that I was turning vegetarian. Now, I have no opinion as to which is better and which is not better, frankly. For example, if you talk to someone in Scotland, in the Scottish Highlands or in Tibet, where they have no option for being vegetarian because it does not grow most of the year at that height, their conditioning has been to be non-vegetarian based on what their ancestor did. So I don't consider myself to be anybody to tell them that you should be vegetarian. It's a personal preference. Therefore, you have to see what is your preference. Likewise, I have seen so many friends have been impacted. Today, they watch videos on Facebook of animal slaughter, which are heartrending. They are heartrending, and hardcore non-vegetarians decided to go vegetarian because this was the first time they were exposed to the actual pain which an animal is subject to, which they are then eating. Now, if you have a sensitive disposition, this can alarm you and you turn vegetarian. But there's no judgment against those who have not reached that point where they have felt that, oh no, we should stop eating. Everyone comes with their destiny and everyone should do exactly what they think and feel they should do. However, two things I would like to say from my personal experience. One was that I noticed that being non-vegetarian had definitely a certain vibration, because I later understood I used to spend a lot of time with yogis and mystics and masters. Some of them are again hardcore non-vegetarian, but I understood that the vibrations of the animal before the slaughter, the fear which is in the animal which knows it is being slaughtered, those enzymes are going into the bloodstream of the animal which we humans are consuming. And I started having dreams which were very unrelated to my daily living aspect. And I explored this and I realized when I was eating certain meals when I was young, in the night it was translating to a specific experience, as you can say. So this I observed. The other thing I observed was that I had gone once to an Ayurvedic center in South India in Coimbatore, and I went for a consultation to the head of the center, who I had known for a few years. So as you know, they feel your pulse. And we were just chatting and he said, you know, give me your hand, and he felt my pulse. And he said to me that, oh, finally you've turned vegetarian. So at that time, I realized that definitely diet impacts the body. It certainly does. But that doesn't make me an advocate for being vegetarian, because according to me, everything depends on a person's genetics and conditioning, and they are free to decide what works for them. Social media is present today. For a hardcore non-vegetarian, they may or may not receive conditioning which makes them perhaps change their eating habits or not. I don't know. There are some people who believe in the theory that for their specific blood type, they need to have the animal protein. So this is a very subjective discussion, which I don't think is really an integral part of what we are discussing. But yes, even Ramana Maharshi has said that a vegetarian diet is preferred because it is sattvic. And so the mind becomes sattvic. And so there's a truth to that too. I think we can take one more question for today.
I have a question about the personal will.
Yes.
So my name is Jerome. It's related to doership and God's will. Where does personal will come into the picture? Is it an illusion, or can it be trained, or is it also a fantasy?
The personal will, Jerome, is not an illusion at all. It is part of the illusion. Mm-hmm. The difference is that you now know with this understanding that what I thought was my personal will, now I understand that whatever I have decided to do in life, whatever actions I have taken, have really not been in my control. Because right from my childhood, the way my parents treated me, the school I went to, the religion I was born into, the geographical area I was in, the economic strata my parents were in, all that which was not in my control shaped me as an individual. So my will is based on my genetics, my DNA, and my conditioning, over none of which I had any control at all. And also, when I'm exercising my will, it is based on something I have either seen, heard, tasted, smelled, or touched. And none of that has been in my control. I read a book by an author, I saw a video on YouTube. Just by chance, I got drawn to the teaching. That was not in my control. So you realize that there are so many events that are not in your control, that there truly is no such thing as a personal will, because that personal will is actually God's will. But now, how do I operate in life knowing this? I operate exactly the way I was operating. I think and do precisely what I should do with my personal will, but I know two things. One is, it is not truly my will. Two, no matter what I do, the actions are not in my control eventually, and the results of those actions are God's will. Because life has shown me, no matter how much I exercise my so-called personal will, what happens thereafter has never been in my control. Sometimes I get what I want, many times I don't get what I want, and sometimes I get something completely unexpected. None of these have ever been in my control.
I see. But what is it, Will? What is it? Is it energy, or is it just the ability to focus? How would you define will?
You see, the four words of the Bible, thy will be done. Whatever happens is will. That is, according to me, what is willed to happen, happens. That is will. What has happened as part of the Maya, the illusion, the individual is made to think it is my will as opposed to God's will. And then that creates the suffering. And the path of Jnana Yoga, the path of knowledge, the path of understanding, is to remove this misconception, to understand that nobody has set you up against God. Because that Maya is what has created the suffering. And that is the beauty of the teaching which that ego has now come across, to end that suffering.
Okay, thank you.
So we will just end now with 2 minutes of silence. I don't know how it is in your cities, but here in Mumbai, they have said the lockdown will be on till 3rd of May, may or may not get extended. So there will definitely be a live stream next Sunday at the same time. And beyond that, we will have to see what happens. But I would really like to thank you all for being so sincere in asking these questions, because it shows that we are utilizing this time in the journey within, in our travels within. And this is what will take us far. Once this phase is over, perhaps there will be a paradigm shift in our understanding. Perhaps it will be a gradual transformation. But everything happens for a reason, which the human mind with its puny intellect cannot grasp. So it is really a great service to oneself to be open to such teachings, because it is bound to change the way you look at life and living. And as Nisargadatta Maharaj says, the seed is already planted. Sooner or later, it will sprout. So we'll just be together for a couple of minutes, and then we can end this session.